You're listening to the Heroes Podcast Network.
Welcome back to Red Shirts and Runabouts, part of the Heroes Podcast Network. I'm one of your regular hosts, Gregory Bosco, and with me as always is Mr. Derek, but we also have a guest this week. It's a guest that's been on the show before, but Derek, go ahead and say hi.
Hi, everybody.
And those of you out there in the Trekverse or whatever we call it these days, you guys remember Zach? You were on about a month ago, right?
Yeah, just about. Yep. Thanks for having me back. I'm a repeat offender as of tonight.
I think you're the first one that's been a repeat guest.
I think so, yeah. You are? No, he's actually the first one that's back, unless you count some of the work Ray's done behind the scenes with us, but yeah, it's definitely Zach.
So welcome back, man.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, we're bringing him back because we're jumping back into the Mechbah, where we pick a favorite topic again. And this week we're discussing season 3. We're actually going to talk about some of the best guest appearances, because when we were talking offline, season 3's got that 6, 7, 8 episode arc where there's like a new guest star in every episode, and all the episodes are fantastic. And it's probably one of the more difficult choices, but before we dive into people's episode choices and they start defending their choices, we've got a little bit of news out there. Not a whole heck of a lot of like the Chris Pine, Chris Hemsworth variety. But, Derek, why don't you go open up?
Well, so there's a... they announced this a little while back, but you know Picard's Ready Room computer?
Yeah.
You know that?
Yeah.
And then Crusher has one, too. It's a different color. Hers is like a tan, and his is black. Mm-hmm. Well, there's a company. They already make like a Batleth and a few other things that is making these for sale. You can pre-order them now. The first wave is already sold out. And they are...
Of course it is.
They are $2,500.
Who's buying these?
It's the same people buying the $9,000 Enterprise models.
Oh, yeah.
From Discovery.
Yeah. Yeah. When I saw that these are going to be $2,500, my first thought was, wow, like a Star Trek, like legit computer. This might be really cool. So I was, you know, going to look into it, and I figured like if it's like a legit PC, this could be pretty exciting. It's not. It's just, it's a prop. It lights up. It's got noises. You know, apparently the text on the screen is like accurate to the show, right? But it doesn't like do stuff. There's no like internet or anything. Like at a minimum, you could have like loaded up Memory Alpha or something, right? Like,
oh, sure.
or make it almost like a DVD player so you can at least watch like the show on it or something along those lines.
I like that idea.
I'd be
okay with that.
Kind of like a small screen, but yeah. $2,500, I mean...
Well, the thing is that they've already sold out of the first wave. Clearly, they didn't have to go the extra mile. That's why they chose not to.
Right. Well, so that's...
But how many was in the first line?
I don't know. I don't know.
Completely sold out of 10. All three of our phase one models.
Right. Yeah. But this is the same company. They have this really amazing Batleth. It's a 1:1 scale replica. That's kind of what they do, is 1:1 scale replica stuff. And it was like $350. And at the time, I was like, oh, that's kind of expensive. Not outrageous, because it is like a sword, right? And then I saw this computer. I'm like, well, now the Batleth looks like a steel.
You can get the Batleth for only $500. Like, eh, well, you know, it is a Batleth.
And you can stab somebody with it.
You could, yeah.
Good, right. home defense weapon.
Well, look, the computer is made out of like a single polymer metal casing. So, I mean, you can still hurt somebody.
It's a gigantic, sure. Like titanium.
But that's more like blunt force trauma, not, you know, slicing open an artery.
So that's out there. For anybody, the first wave is sold out at least. I haven't checked in a few days. So I know there's 3 waves that are posted. So you can, you know, get yours still in the winter time frame. Wave 2, I believe, was like February or March.
Oh, okay.
If I remember right.
So right after I do my taxes, I've got some extra money I'm sitting on.
Do I pay off the air conditioning? How do I explain to Eric? I'm like, I bought another Star Trek prop. Unfortunately, this one doesn't actually do anything like the other ones I can use for a costume or something. This one... We'll just kind of go next to my laptop.
Priorities.
Well, that's the thing. Priorities. Like, it does make the Anovos Monster Maroon from like Wrath of Khan seem more reasonably priced, because it's like $2,000, right?
Yeah, and yeah. The new jacket they just did, the field jacket from Space Station Regular 1, they're just selling for like $15. And the work looks great. And, you know, we were talking about that off the show, how they kind of do their sourcing and such. But the work at least looks good.
Yes.
It looks the part, and it's functional. I would definitely wear it to work. It'd be 103 degrees in summertime, and I'd probably still be wearing it to work just because it's fashionable. But
well, you know, it's for all your trips to Alaska.
All the Alaska trips. It's still one of the states I have never been to.
Yeah, man.
It's one of the few that I have been to.
That's so weird. but
Alaska.
At least you can wear that, though, right? Like, if it's really cold out, you could put that jacket on,
right?
You know,
but would you feel comfortable doing so after you've spent all that much money?
I don't know.
I'm thinking kids. Like, one of my kids would, like, spill something on it, and I'd be like, jeez.
Yeah.
I spent way too much money on
this. $500 spill.
Yeah.
How do you explain that to the dry cleaner? You have to dry clean this one spot, but don't touch the rest of the jacket.
Yeah. Leave the rest of it intact.
Yeah. Another collectible news. McFarlane Toys got the new license for Star Trek toys and collectibles. A while back, they announced it last year, but we're finally seeing it. The first two action figures from McFarlane Toys are in the wild now, and that's Kirk and Picard.
Good choices.
Kirk from the original series and Picard from what it seems like season 3 onward. Doesn't look like the jumpsuit. Highly detailed action figures. They come with, you know, different hands for posing and different, you know, like little accessories, you know, phasers and whatnot. They're really nice, and they're only $20, which for, like, if you were to look at, like, NECA and some of these other action figures, you know, they range $30, $40, sometimes $50.
Mm-hmm.
So for $19.99, that's not bad.
So it'd be nice if we'd get, like, a Picard from The Inner Light where he's older, and he's got the hat, or Picard from Tapestry when he's got the medical blue, the science blue uniform on. And
yeah.
Come on. They know there's people out there that would buy it. I would buy it.
There is a Tapestry Picard action figure from back in the day when Playmates was making them from the 90s. Man. It's a very sought-after figure. That's,
I would imagine
that's
so.
That's what I've always kept my eye out for. I don't have one. I do have his Dixon Hill.
Oh, right.
That's a good one to have.
I have that one. Yeah. And I have the Crusher to go with it. So
perfect.
That's one of my little joys in my collection.
It's kind of an essential Picard to have.
Right? Yeah, I think so. But, man, yeah, Tapestry would be cool.
I've got the Worf and Alexander from Fistful of Data's.
Oh, the cowboy ones?
Yeah. Kind of cowboy set. I really, really, it was a missed opportunity, though. There needed to have been a bunch more Data action figures, because I would so buy the one of Data in the dress.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that would be worth it.
And they also need Worf from the Robin Hood.
Yeah.
Oh,
I am not a merry man.
I protest. you could always just make a dress for your Data.
That sounds like a lot of work.
I mean, I don't sew.
I'm not a tiny seamstress, Derek.
Yeah, that's a heck of a lot of micro sewing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The next action figures, though, in that line are supposed to be Michael Burnham and Spock.
Oh, okay.
So, not super shocking, given that she's the lead in the new show, and Spock has kind of, you know, spanned almost all of Star Trek, with a few exceptions, of course. So,
his name will be mentioned tonight, most likely.
I mean, I would imagine so, yeah. And he'll show up in season 2 of Discovery, so, yeah. But I think that's it from, like, collectible new stuff. I guess there is, we were talking beforehand that the Steelbook for Discovery Season 1 is now available for pre-order at Best Buy. And its price has dropped. Everything was supposed to be $54.99. It's $44.99 now.
Totally worth it.
So, you know, $10. And yeah, I pre-ordered the Steelbook because I am a sucker.
Same. I'm a sucker for a Steelbook. It's an exclusive. I mean, this Trek's my show, so
yeah.
Why not spend the money?
Well, I figure I spent $55 a season for the Game of Thrones, so I can, you know, pay $45 for Star Trek. It seems reasonable.
That's the problem. I do so much travel. It's like digital is just easier for me.
Yeah.
Because that way I don't have to haul around all those DVDs.
That's true. It's a good point.
I tell myself I'm afraid of the digital rights being revoked, or I'm afraid of, like, something happening to the cloud or whatever. But, I mean, if something does, if you know, our entire world goes down, like, I'm going to have bigger problems than how I can watch Star Trek. So,
well, I'll admit, I'm in favor
of digital.
I'm one of those people, like, always worried about, like, an Enron crisis at Amazon.
Right.
Where it turns out they've been, like, faking their stock prices or something.
Oh, yeah.
And the company just...
And there goes your whole library.
Everything's just gone. I'm like, oh my god, thousands of dollars in movies. Just
look at this.
Come over to Derek's house.
If anything ever happens, you just come on over.
I've
got all the DVDs. We can watch them on VHS if you want. I've got a bunch of that.
5 days a week of red shirts and runabouts with Star Trek in the background.
Yes.
All right. Well, I guess we should probably just jump right into the mech bot then.
Yeah, let's do it.
Since we've got Zach as a guest, I figured Zach would have the honor of presenting his case first. Ooh.
All right. I don't know if that's helpful or good or not, but I'm all for it.
So which episode did you get for the fine people out there?
So I chose Hollow Pursuits, which is kind of a twofer. I didn't realize this when I first selected it, but it's a twofer because, of course, it's a famous Barclay episode, or Broccoli episode, if you're into the nicknames. Though, as Data mentioned, nicknames often denote fondness, so I'm only using it from a place of fondness at this point. But it's a double hitter because Guinan is also in this episode. So, and she's always a welcome face on Trek.
Mm-hmm.
So, I guess just to summarize, for those of you who may not remember at home, Hollow Pursuits is where we get introduced to this awkward, kind of socially awkward, unique crew member who doesn't quite fit in. One of the critiques of Next Generation is that everyone's so polished and that everything of significance happens to the same 10 people week after week. And they are. They all kind of have their act together. They're the top of their field. And so here we are, season three, and Barclay is kind of a foil to that. Like, he doesn't look or act like the rest. He's a little nervous. He stutters. He fumbles. He doesn't quite seem so sure of himself. He's kind of the antithesis of everyone else. Maybe, especially the antithesis of Riker, in a lot of ways. And I chose, so basically, I mean, as a brief summary, there are, there's an issue that happens week, as there is week to week. A lot of the episode really does focus on this guy, Barclay, and how he doesn't fit in. But the general premise is, there's something going down, and it takes this unique perspective of this kind of fumbling crew member to bring it all together. And so ultimately why I chose this episode, and we can get into more detail later, but I really like the character of Barclay. I like how they use him in Next Gen. I like the way he shows up again in subsequent shows and films. He's a character that before we got Discovery, there was a part of me that thought, man, I would really love a like older, wiser Barclay, like teaching at the academy, or like have some aspect of like him be in the show, and like, cause you could continue to see his arc and his growth. And that to me would be fascinating. And yeah, I mean, you guys talked when you guys first were going through the Discovery episodes that Tilly was this unique character. Mm-hmm. And I think Barclay's kind of a precursor for Tilly in a lot of ways. Kind of shows that there's more than just one super confident alpha type up in space. So
I mean, Barclay's probably one of the most real characters on the show.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, he fits that mold where they're... Well, wasn't there a line in the episode where they're not even sure how he got on the Enterprise?
Yeah, yeah.
And I like that because that's real. I can see people at my work making that comment. How'd this person get this job?
It's like, right.
What's going on? And
it's real talk.
Yeah, that's real talk. And he's like that nervous, that kind of goofy. And you know what? I have to admit, the older I get, the holodeck thing, I think I completely understand.
Yeah,
I can see how somebody would have a holodeck issue if they have like low confidence in real life. And for Star Trek to talk about that like 20, 30 years ago, I mean, that's...
Sure.
Well, think about what people get addicted to today, like television already, video games, right? The holodeck is just the next technological progression of those mediums.
Absolutely.
You know, except you can control all of it.
Which leads to some comedic hijinks in this episode.
But let's not forget, something kind of important here is that this episode, being the introduction to Barclay, sets the tone for that character forever, because when we see him again in Voyager later on, he has that obsession and he has that addiction to the holo programs because he's created Voyager on the holodeck.
Right.
Right? And he doesn't want to leave it. And those are his friends and his family type of thing. So that stays with his character. And I think that's good writing, because anybody who has a real addiction knows it never really leaves you.
Right.
Right. It's always there and relapsing happens.
Yeah.
Right. So I kind of like that bookend to his character that it, you know, he grows, right? Obviously he gets promoted and he's part of the Pathfinder project that gets Voyager home. Like
he's in First Contact,
right? He's in First Contact, and you know, he's an incredibly intelligent person who becomes very successful, but he's not perfect.
Right.
And Greg and you and I talked about this last week on the Tones of Trek episode, where, you know, in TNG, when people screw up and like something's wrong, it's really because they're too perfect, you know, or their real flaw saves the day. You know, Barclay's not quite like that.
Yeah. If you interview any of the TNG cast for an interview and you ask them their greatest weaknesses, they'd say, well, I don't have any weaknesses. I'm just too perfect.
Mm-hmm.
I do like Zach's idea of a future Barclay. Like, bring Barclay onto the Picard show.
Yes.
And have him be chief operations engineer instructor or whatever for the Academy. Or have him be on Deep Space Nine 30 years in the future. He's something. Make him... Have him do something with him, because the dude loves Starfleet. He stays in Starfleet. He's involved with Voyager and Pathfinder and all this stuff. I mean, it's
yeah,
it's completely feasible somebody like him would be another Miles O'Brien. Oh, who yeah. stays in for 30 years because it's what they love doing.
Yeah, there's room for him.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, as a side note, that's one of the most exciting things about the Picard show is that there's room to bring all these characters back and see what they're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it would be a missed opportunity to not bring in some of these, I don't mean disrespectful, B-level characters who didn't get, you know, the forefront title credits,
yeah.
you know, who are still around. Like, they have stories to be told.
For sure.
So there's still hope for Ashley Judd as Robin Leffler.
Oh, God.
On the future Picard show.
Oh, what a great cameo that was.
Yeah.
I guess maybe it wasn't really a cameo back then, but...
It was one of her fur. I mean, because Will Wheaton was her first on-screen kiss, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, I'm distracting from the Eggball with Ashley Judd discussion. But she was great as Robin Leffler. So again,
she's
one of those ones. They could, if she ever wanted to, do two episodes of Star Trek 20 years in the future. Because she still looks fabulous. She's still active in the community and everything. Might as well.
Yeah. I'm all for that. But the way this episode opens is one of my favorites.
It's so good. Yeah. The whole bait and switch thing. And there's so many of these in like classic television, but especially in TNG, where like, especially this far into the series, you kind of know what to expect. And so when an episode starts and you don't know what's going on, it's very funny. I mean, and seeing Barclay interact with these holographic versions of the crew and you're like, for one, never met this guy. Who is this guy? Why is he calling the shots? Why is he in seemingly the most important person on the Enterprise? And I've never heard of him before now. And you're like, this has got to be a holodeck adventure. And yep, sure enough, there it is.
Well, he just, like, knocks out Riker.
Oh, yeah. That was great. Like, the subtle way that which he manipulates the characters is interesting. Like, he even makes Riker shorter.
Oh, later on when they're, like, the Musketeers.
Yeah, and the Musketeers. Like, yeah.
Yeah, Troy even comments on that. She goes, well, you are very tall.
Right.
And I always love because Will Wheaton's on the holiday. Oh, Wesley. But they have him in the background. He's, like, always eating.
Always.
It's, like, all he's doing the entire episode, when he's on the holiday, is just eating.
Yeah.
And I've always been trying to rack my brain why. Like, of all the things he made Wesley Crusher do, he's like, I'm going to make a holographic image of you. Just eating cake. Just don't do anything. Just sit there and eat cake.
What was the thought process behind that?
But I think it's because he was intimidated because Wesley was younger and... Yeah. I don't know if necessarily smarter, but he was more confident.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the show likes to show off how Wesley's, like, the most intelligent person on the ship. He may not have the experience,
right
and necessarily the textbook knowledge, mm-hmm. but as far as straight intelligence goes, he was, like, the super boy in the first couple of seasons.
He's a threat to all the fragile male egos on board the Enterprise.
I think Barclay just saw a kid and wanted him to look like a child, number one. And number two, just didn't want him involved.
Yeah.
Right? But he was still there because he's still, you know, renting space in Barclay's head.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, that's a good point.
But
just a command crew, though. None of his fellow engineers from engineering that he works with every day. Which is kind of nice. It's a little bit of hero worship, which on Next Generation makes complete sense. You've got, like, the elite command crew on one ship for the entire fleet. So mm-hmm. I kind of like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's part of it. Like, you can justify it in the universe to say, like, yeah, it's all of his leadership, the people he has to answer to and the people that he wants to be like, you know. But on the other side of it, it's also, you know, because it's a TV show, if they just threw in a bunch of co-workers that we, the audience, didn't know, there'd be no significance
to what's going on. After opening up the episode of the character we don't even know. I mean,
yeah. Right. You know, you wouldn't get to see, you know, Patrick Stewart try and, you know, do some, you know, Three Musketeers stuff.
Right.
Like, that's so great. You know, but you can tell that's Patrick Stewart and Brent Spiner had a lot of fun during the holodeck portions of this.
Oh, sure.
But sure. I will say, I think my favorite single moment in the episode is when Picard accidentally calls him broccoli.
Yeah.
Yep.
Like, because... You know, I've told people before, like, I want to be Picard when I grow up. And so, like, I've been in that position where I'm like, say the name right. And I can just, I feel that in my soul when Picard screws it up. I really do.
Yeah.
Well done, Mr. Broccoli.
And I mean, he just freezes.
Yes.
And poor Barclay just puts his head down and turns around and walks. Nobody says anything after that, after Picard cries. He's like, oh, Mr. Barclay.
Well, like, Riker looks like he's about to laugh, and I don't know if that's Riker about to laugh or Jonathan Frakes about to laugh.
A little bit of both. From column A, from column B.
Maybe it turns out it was a complete mistake on Patrick Stewart's part.
That'd be great. Oh, yeah.
And that's why Riker's just like, what?
That'd be a little, great little behind-the-scenes anecdote.
And they just left it in.
Yeah. Yeah, the holodeck stuff in this episode was very well done. It was humorous. I liked how Riker, or not Riker, I liked how Troy was trying to be extra empathetic and high and mighty about, like, oh, you know, this is just, you know, his fantasy and we should indulge us. We should, you know, respect him and try to understand him. And this is the minute she sees his interpretation of her, she flips a switch and it's quite a dramatic turn. And that was one of the funny aspects of this episode was that, you know, it can be uncomfortable facing how other people see us because it isn't in line with how we see ourselves. And especially even if you know someone is kind of detached from reality in that sense, like Barclay, like, it's uncomfortable, like, you know, having to deal with that, so.
Yeah, the whole, you know, computer delete Troy image, and Riker stops her. Right. Riker's like, no, yeah, he said we need to see where this is going. We need to indulge this right. And figure out what's going on in his brain.
Right. Careful what you wish for.
So what about this episode, Zach, makes you feel like it's the best guest appearance? As fun as the episode is, because it is a really fun episode.
For sure. So the reason I picked this one, the reason I feel like it's the best guest appearance, in part is for what we've already kind of discussed with Barclay and what his character means to the show and to Trek in general. But I feel like this episode embodies the Vulcan Idyk, the infinite diversities and infinite combinations, and that things are a little bit different this time around. We've got someone who isn't like everyone else, and we're seeing the value of a different perspective that we wouldn't have heard otherwise. I loved Picard's dedication, especially early on, to encourage everyone else to find a place for him. And so, like, I mean, the first Trek I ever watched was the original series, and you know, Captain Kirk is super cool, but I honestly believe out of all the captains, I would be the most successful. All of us would probably be the most successful under a leader like Picard. Kirk is gonna, you know, send you out in a red shirt and, you know, if you come back, you come back. If not, he's going to be too busy with, you know, the local natives to notice. But Picard was very passionate about finding a place where everyone can fit in. And he believed the best in his people, and he encouraged them to think outside their own box of superiority. And I really love that about this episode. I mean, it's fun, but when you get down to it, I feel like it does a really good job of embodying the openness and acceptance that Trek is all about.
Well, and you bring up a good point, because there's that conversation between Picard and LaForge, when LaForge is like, I can't relate to the guy, I can't work with him, blah, blah, blah. And I remember Picard's like, transferring a problem is an easy solution that doesn't create, it's not like a, it doesn't solve a problem.
Right, exactly.
And I like that, because that's kind of like real life work, as we mm-hmm. all have sometimes conflicts with coworkers. But then again, an actual leader's going to say, look, there's a solution here. That doesn't mean getting rid of a Derek or Zach or a Greg. It means
right.
Find a solution, find a common ground, and that common ground kind of exists in the episode when they do start realizing, like, man, this guy does have a technical mindset behind him right. underneath his nervousness and awkwardness that meshes very well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And yeah, he's outwardly awkward, but, you know, Worf's got awkward moments.
Right.
Because he's a Klingon in a Federation ship, and he's got all this stuff. They just kind of let his awkward moments go by because he's usually, you know, loud.
Right.
You know, and when Q is talking to him, he's like, what can I do to prove it to you? Die. I mean, we all just, like, if Riker would have said that, Picard would have been like, what? Worf says it, it's okay.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, there is so much diversity in Trek, and even at this point in the Federation's history, and you've got all races and species represented, and yet, if you are, it doesn't matter what race or species you are, if you're slightly different from the rest, like if you're different in a way that makes everyone else uncomfortable, that's going to be a difficult thing for people to wrap their heads around. And I like the way that Picard pushes the crew to do so.
There's even a little bit of a parallel between how Picard handles things and the holodeck with the Three Musketeers, you know, like mm-hmm. kind of the all for one for all mentality. Yeah. That is the Enterprise in Picard's sure. command.
Yeah.
Right? Even, you know, even though Riker wants to let him go, you know, that's not Picard style.
No.
Ironically, I just watched the Disney Three Musketeers on the weekends. So.
Oh, yeah? Nice. It's been a long time.
I still love it. Yeah, I know everybody hates on it, but...
Oh, I don't hate on it.
I remember
enjoying it a lot when I saw it.
The general audiences.
I'm actually a really big fan of The Man in the Iron Mask.
Oh, there you go. That's
which is a Three Musketeers movie, yeah. kind of.
Yeah.
But I like that one a lot, actually. Yeah.
See, when Picard show comes back in, they're going to have a holodeck episode with The Man in the Iron Mask.
Oh, ooh, there you go.
There we go.
There we go.
Nice. A lot of holodeck potential.
Especially
with today's technology.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the future now. Who knows?
I mean,
yeah.
Discovery, they had holographic images for computer. I mean, right. That's DS9 technology, so I'm like, good for them.
For sure.
One small note on the episode, it was nominated for an Emmy for Outstanding Achievement in Hairstyling in a series.
Hairstyling.
That's
funny. Because of the holodeck stuff, maybe? I thought they were wigs.
I guess, but... yeah.
I mean, but you still have to style
You still have to style a wig.
Yeah. So I'm assuming it's the holodeck stuff.
It certainly wasn't Barclay's hair. There's not much to speak of there.
No.
No. Yeah, because you could tell in first contact. I'm like, man, he's got a lot of hair all of a sudden.
Yeah.
And then, interestingly enough, Dr. Crusher is only in the episode as a hologram. Her real version never shows up on that episode.
You're right.
Yeah, everybody else does. Yeah, nobody gets a random widget sickness to have to go to the holiday, or to go to the holiday, to go to sick bay. Yeah.
And since he doesn't spend a lot of time on the bridge, there's not really like a good excuse to have her around. So. Yeah. But there you go.
My final fun anecdote for the story is that as I was rewatching it in preparation for this podcast, I realized this is basically the exact same story as Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
Is it?
In the sense that you've got this one person who is different from the rest and ends up having this really useful trait that actually helps progress the plot forward.
Yeah, I mean...
It's not a Christmas story per se. It's just, hey, you've got this one guy, whether he's socially awkward or he's got a blinking red nose, that seems weird and they're out of place and shunned until they actually serve utility and save the day with their unique skill set.
Well, because like the underlying plot, that's really the B plot. You know, that's what's happening to the ship, and they're all going to die. It's the B plot somehow. That the ship is going haywire from what appears to be some type of infection.
You're right.
And Barclay has an idea, but because of his confidence issues, and he stutters when he is stressed out. He can't get it out, and Wesley kind of keeps cutting him off, even though Barclay's trying to say something slightly different, and he gets kind of frustrated, but once they give him a chance to get it out and say what he's trying to say, everyone's like, oh shit. Right. Right? Like, that's what it is.
Yeah.
And, I don't know, as someone who grew up with some friends who had stuttering, and things of that nature, it kind of rang true to me, because these were usually people who were so smart, they couldn't talk fast enough for their brains.
Right.
Right? They were thinking too fast, and their mouth couldn't keep up with their head.
Right.
You know? And that's kind of how Barclay is some of the time.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's brought on from stress, because he's having some confidence issues. But even that carries on in his character all the way through the Pathfinder stuff in Voyager.
Yeah.
He's also in one of my favorite episodes of all time, which is The Nth Degree, when they're dealing with the Argus Array, and they encounter that alien probe. It's one of the... My personal favorite episodes. I know it's on nobody else's like top 25, which is fine. But
I forgot about that one.
I am a huge fan of Barclay episodes.
Yeah. Me too.
The first episode of Star Trek I ever purchased on VHS is Genesis, which is the episode where he gets a disease named after him for mutating everybody on the ship.
And he turns into a horrible arachnid, basically.
Yeah. It is freaky, man. You ever see that in HD? Jeez.
I did, after I bought the Blu-ray.
That is some creepy stuff. That's one of my favorite. I love Barclay. I really do. He makes, because he's so normal, he's so real, he makes for some really fun episodes, because it breaks from that kind of sterilized TNG atmosphere.
Yeah.
And
speaking of Genesis, did Worf ever get in trouble for ripping that one ensign's spine like in half?
Oh, gosh. You know, they don't really talk about the episodic nature
of TNG. That was collateral damage. Yeah.
It was fine.
Didn't he murder a man? Yeah, we don't really talk about it. Don't bring it up. He's very sensitive.
He literally wasn't himself, Zach. Right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It wasn't his fault.
Man, could you imagine that
excuse at a disciplinary meeting and work? It wasn't myself.
Part of me wants Discovery to do a take on that episode, because with their budget and modern technology and that type of storytelling, they could probably do some, like, Jeff Goldblum fly level stuff, you know?
Yeah.
So, I'd like to see that. But anyway, anything else for Hollow Pursuits?
Nope, that about covers all my thoughts.
Okay.
Are you with the Force?
Is the Force with you?
Well, the Force is with us over at the Echo Station Podcast, a new Star Wars series from the Heroes Podcast Network.
Join us in a galaxy not so far away every other Monday as we discuss everything Star Wars from the original films through the whole EU.
So pour yourself some blue milk and get cozy in that tauntaun with the Echo Station Podcast. Find out more at heroespodcast.com.
Derek, take it over.
So my episode for what I think is the best guest appearance episode is Sarek, which is the name of the episode about the character. Mark Leonard returns as Sarek, who is Spock's father. He's an ambassador now. Much older. He's 207, 202, something like that. 20-something. And he has one final mission before he's going to retire. And it's a very, very important diplomatic mission. So it's something that fits, of course, Picard's style very well, because he's the diplomatic president, captain, President Picard.
Don't we wish. He's got my vote.
He's the diplomatic captain out of the, you know, the Trek captains, right? They all have their styles. He's the diplomatic one.
You mean Lorca's not diplomatic? No, maybe a little bit, right? Okay,
not he's as diplomatic as a Slytherin could be.
Yeah, there you go.
Damn it, Snape.
Drake, not Draco.
Yeah.
Lucius. There
Lucius.
Yeah, we go. We found it. We found it.
No, I mean, after Picard, I mean, the next most diplomatic is Janeway. You know, and then Kirk, and then probably Sisko, because with
Sisko's he's the least diplomatic of
Yeah,
one.
Especially once he gets
he
the
punched
goatee.
Q in the face. That's all you need to know,
dude. He nukes the atmosphere of a planet.
Yeah,
on a personal vendetta, the dude gets a little unhinged sometimes. I'm not saying he doesn't get results.
Right. Hey, they're on the fringes of Federation territory.
That's right. Yeah.
You do what you got to do out there.
So the point of the episode, so he shows up on the ship, Sarek, along with his second wife, and
which, as a side note, I mean, I guess once you go human, you don't go back. He's got a thing for human women.
He does. So his excuse has always been that because he's the ambassador to Earth,
right?
You know, best to know Earth as well as possible. But part of me thinks that was his reason the first time around.
Mm-hmm.
The second time around was familiarity.
Yeah.
You know, he liked being with a human.
Right.
He appreciated that because, you know, she even says it later in the episode, at the tail end of the episode, that she knows that he loves her.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't have to express it in a human way. She gets it.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that ability to understand each other is really important.
Oh, absolutely.
So he's there, and all of a sudden, you know, certain people are kind of snapping at each other. You know, Wesley and Geordi, which is a weird pairing, snap at each other. And a fight breaks out in 10 forward. And, you know, Riker gets just cold cocked in the face.
And thinking of the Wesley and Geordi incident, it happens so naturally.
Yeah.
Because I remember even rewatching the episode, it still throws me off because it's just like...
just escalates real quickly.
Yeah, it escalates from like a 0 to 100. And you're like, what the heck? Because there's no buildup.
No.
Well, and the topic makes perfect sense for Geordi to be kind of spiteful about it.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, let's face it, Geordi does not have the most successful romantic life in the world.
He gets called out on it.
His best relationship is with a holodeck program, you know, throwback to Barclay. So, yeah, that argument is really good, you know, but just everyone, like, you know, O'Brien gets in, it starts a fist fight, basically, in 10-4. O'Brien, of all people, like,
right.
The only enlisted man on the ship.
The only non-commissioned officer we know.
Yeah.
You know, who, like, he is, like, the pinnacle of doing his duty and following orders, and there he is, like, starting to fight over a table.
Right.
So they put they're supposed to leave Sarek alone because he's old and he needs his strength and his energy and all of that. And then they hold the concert. You see him cry, which is like, what is happening?
It's a big moment.
I mean, before that, the only time you see a Vulcan do anything remotely close to that, would be, I guess, when Spock interacts with V'ger.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah, I guess so, because he was showing a little bit of emotion about encountering a life form like that,
or maybe a Mock Time when he finds out that he didn't actually kill Jim.
Oh yeah.
You know, but otherwise, you know, Vulcans don't show emotion like that. And you find out that he has Bendai syndrome, which is something that only affects Vulcans over the age of 200. So, you know, I mean, if you know, that's a good small segment of the population, I would imagine. And it basically causes them to lose control of their emotions, which has got to be the Vulcan hell, right?
Right.
Well, that's what a lot of people misunderstand, that they don't watch Star Trek. They think Vulcans don't have emotions. It's the opposite. They feel the same emotions, but they don't have emotional responses.
Arguably they're, more intense emotions.
Yeah, they have more. Yeah, they have more intense emotions. It's just they're able to not contain them. I guess contain them is the best word I can think of. Is just isolate them and focus on the intellect and on the logic of things.
They must be able to compartmentalize. And that was one of the things I realized watching this episode, is that like Vulcans just have this intense ability to compartmentalize that most humans don't.
It's it's all about control for the Vulcans. I mean, that was the big difference with the Romulans, is why they left, right? And basically evolved as a separate species, because they wanted their emotions. You look at, I mean, you know, not to bring up Star Trek V, but Cybok embraces his emotions.
Right.
And there's some bad stuff in that movie, but his character is very intriguing. It's an interesting concept to see a laughing, smiling Vulcan. You know, we never really get to see that other than some inconsistencies in the original series. And so, yeah, there is that misconception that Vulcans are emotionless. No, their emotions are so much stronger than us that they have to push them down or they destroy themselves.
Right.
And Enterprise gets into that in a lot more detail, much later, of course, slash earlier. So you find out that he has Bendai syndrome, and because of that, he's being kind of emotionally controlled a bit by his counterpart. Who's, you know, using his limited abilities to try and suppress this problem as much as possible to get this last mission done. But it's randomly impacting people all over the ship, and people are arguing with each other. I mean, even Picard and Riker have a moment on the bridge where they're yelling at each other, which, I mean, the only other time you see anything like that is in First Contact between him and Worf when they want to blow up the ship, you know?
Right. Beverly hits her own son.
She does. She slaps Wesley.
Yeah.
I forgot about the Wesley slap. Because then I remember her talking to Troy about it.
Right.
And just being like, well, I've never struck my son before. That's something you don't even think of happening in Star Trek, is somebody striking a child.
Yeah.
And what's really interesting about it is it's all aggressive emotions, you know, and it harkens back to that problem with the Vulcans, and that it's because it's the aggressive tendencies. Like, they were incredibly violent people before they kind of started following this dogma of controlling their emotions. So it's not that, you know, someone's too happy or, you know, too sexually aroused. It's all aggressive fighting nature. And I mean, some of that's probably due to Sarek being frustrated himself.
Right.
He may not want to admit to anybody, even himself, maybe, that he's having these issues, but subconsciously he's very frustrated.
Well, and it's that undertone of fear. He's scared of what the syndrome's doing to him, scared of losing his, you know, dignity as a Vulcan, the logic and his outward appearance he's been putting on for, with the Federation, essentially 170 years as a diplomat. If you think he started young in his life, which most diplomats probably would in some capacity, for 170 years he's been a leading mind of the Federation. And he's watching himself fall down that rabbit hole of emotions, which I guess to a Vulcan, it would be like, for a human, it would be, I don't even know what the equivalent would be.
I mean, if you had, like, dementia, like, there are a lot of, like, you know, dementia patients or people with Alzheimer's who have some aggressive tendencies. And I think it's because that insecurity and that fear comes out, and you're still with it enough to be aware that you're losing control. And that's a very scary thing to be in. And amplify that even more when you figure that this is a Vulcan with certain expectations of himself and with certain societal expectations within the Federation that he be able to fill this very cold, logical role. And so, like, that's an unpleasant experience for anybody. But when society is telling you that you have to be a certain way and you can't even fit that mold anymore, that's terrifying.
I think the comparison to Alzheimer's and dementia is perfect. I think that's basically what this is a parallel for, right? Just, you know, shrouded in an alien. That's what Star Trek does best, right?
Right.
But yeah, it's a very emotional episode. I mean, the end of it probably has one of Patrick Stewart's best performances on the show.
For sure.
You know, when he does a mind meld with Sarek to give Sarek control. And this is a very big deal in TNG, because other than seeing Bones in the pilot for a minute, the original series is barely mentioned. You have, you know, the Naked Now, which is like episode like 3 or 4 or whatever. But otherwise, like, they really try to distance themselves from the original series. It's why you don't really see Vulcans. They wanted to focus on the Romulans and other species that were new, right? So bringing on a Vulcan, one that had been from the original series already, and referencing Spock was a really big deal. But doing the mind meld took it even a step farther, because by then we had only seen it in a few small situations. Pretty much Vulcan to Vulcan to, like, alien with You know, Spock in Devil Horta, in the Dark.
The Horta.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah.
And with, when he does it with McCoy, but that's an extremely unique situation with him and McCoy in Wrath of Khan.
Exactly. Right. And you see Sarek mind meld with Kirk in 3,
mm-hmm.
right? Trying to find out what happened. And so it's one of those things we know is very powerful, but is not used all that much. And so Picard basically wants to give his stability to Sarek to complete this mission,
yeah.
which is a huge undertaking. And Picard has to then deal with not only his own uncontrolled emotions, but Sarek's,
right.
which again are much more intense than human emotions. And it's an incredibly powerful scene.
Yeah.
Crusher's watching him trying to make sure, you know, nothing like serious happens, but Picard's dealing with some intense stuff.
Yeah.
No, absolutely. And it's Patrick Stewart's acting in the scene. It's, you legit feel for the character of Picard. Because he just did, he absorbed 200 years of pent-up emotion trying to hold it together during an already tense moment, or tense time on the ship when they're having these negotiations with, I think they're called the Lagarans, because they live in those slime pits or those mud pits or whatever.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
And they're all like, who the hell sits in this? And they're like, well, to you it's disgusting, to the Lagarans it's home. So it's already a tense situation. He's dealing with Sarek's emotions, and he's also got a relationship with Sarek. I mean, he wants his friend and diplomat to be healthy, and he knows... Mm-hmm. You know, what's the cure for Ben dying? I think it was Crusher, like, well, there is no cure.
There is none.
Yeah. I think it was Perrin says that, there is no cure. And he knows, and Sarek knows that as well.
And I mean, when you look at the two characters, Sarek and Picard, they both have a lot of respect for each other. You know, when you know, Sarek describes Picard's career as satisfactory, is like, that's one of the greatest compliments a Vulcan, especially of his stature, could give a human.
Mm-hmm.
And... You know, Picard even makes the comment at the end of the episode that after a mind meld, you know, Sarek says they each get the best parts of the other. And
yeah.
Picard's like, I think I got the better end of that bargain.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't want to take away from Mark Leonard's performance
oh, yeah.
in this episode, which is probably his best performance as well, especially as Sarek or on Star Trek, since he played a couple other characters. When he has the argument with Picard and he has to be angry and he has to kind of get mentally stuck in himself in this logical loop, and go back and forth from extremes. Like, it is so well done.
Yeah.
No, it's the acting on both parts throughout the entire episode. It was fantastic. And they actually use parts of the story in the Unification episodes a couple years later.
Because
Sarek is back as another guest star in that episode when they're searching for, essentially a search for Spock in Next Generation. So they tie the stories very well together. And Mark Leonard has been involved in Star Trek for forever. I mean, he's like Majel Barrett. He's always been playing a part in all most of the shows, doing some one thing or the other.
Mm-hmm.
Until the actor unfortunately passed away. But no, he did a hell of a job in this episode.
Yeah.
It's going to make this Mechbach very difficult.
He had a good screen presence, and so did Picard. And I love that you touched on that last scene. I loved how powerful it was, and it touched on kind of my frustration with Vulcan philosophy, like, just on a personal level. Like, the episode's top-notch, but, like, I feel like there is a level of inherent danger in repressing your emotions to that extent. And, you know, Vulcans, maybe they've got it figured out to some extent, or maybe they don't, and that's why 200 years down the road, they have this intense, you know, illness that affects them. But there was a really powerful moment in that scene, like, towards the end, where Picard's just losing his shit, and he is clearly distraught, and he expressed some form of discomfort in his inability to suppress the emotions. And Beverly just grabs him, holds him, and says, "Don't even try." And it's this powerful moment of, like, I feel like in life, leaning into some of these uncomfortable emotions as opposed to suppressing them actually allows for greater healing and ability to move forward. So,
yeah, I mean, you look at the Vulcan physiology that we know, like what they became. They basically altered their evolution because of this. Mm-hmm. The whole concept of, you know, the every 7 years of Pon Farr.
Right.
If they don't fulfill that in some way, they die. They straight up die. Right? Like,
you have to purge those emotions once every 7 years.
But think about it, right? I mean, it impacted both the original series and Voyager pretty heavily because you had Amok Time, which is one of the most iconic episodes of Star Trek that's parodied, you know, all the time. And Spock thinks he kills Kirk.
Mm-hmm.
And then in Voyager, you have Tuvok and the fact that they're 70,000 light years away and he doesn't feel like he can be unfaithful to his wife. But he'll die otherwise.
Right.
And did they bring it up in Enterprise with T'Pol? I thought for some reason they did with her and...
It's been.
I thought it was hinted.
It might have been. It's been honestly. Yeah. It's been very long since I've seen Enterprise.
Enterprise focuses a lot on the Vulcans, and they do focus a lot on the taboo of the mind meld, which I guess 100 years later in the TOS time frame is less taboo.
Yeah.
But they very well may have.
Well, Enterprise always kind of showed that Vulcan concept of they think the humans are moving too fast.
Right.
The humans are advancing. They're doing all this, and that kind of shows the emotional side of humanity where. The bulk of people, I think, have that drive to always want to do better.
Mm-hmm.
They want to do better for themselves, or if they want their kids to do better than them. It's that drive, and with the Vulcans kind of containing their emotions, it's not, they haven't stagnated, but they're kind of at an equilibrium.
Where... Well, they've almost stagnated, though. If you look at what the Vulcans were like during First Contact and Enterprise, and then you move ahead to where they are during TNG and Voyager...
Right.
I mean, look at the advancements that humanity has made, or even the Klingons have made.
True.
Compared to the Vulcans. The Vulcans are so focused on their logic and their science that there's not a lot of growth from a societal standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the other civilizations, especially the Klingons and Earth, advanced significantly during that same time period. And I think a lot of it has to do with not necessarily unhinged emotion, but riding those emotions.
Right.
That most of the people, follow their emotions, let their emotions be their guide. Klingons for sure, right? And in Star Trek, I mean, on the Federation side, that is, Picard's one of the more controlled emotional characters. You look at Kirk, Janeway, and Sisko... Even Archer, they're pretty emotional people.
Right.
And even if you look at the first officers have almost always been the kind of like a stabilizing factor. Because you have Riker Riker's got emotions and he's a bit of a flirt, but he's kind of a duty first kind of guy for the most part.
Yeah.
And same thing with Spock, obviously, and Chakotay. And then you look at Kieran Reese. It's like I would love to see a cast or a crew of like a Bajoran and a Vulcan, because the Bajorans are hyper-emotional, like, on purpose. Yeah. It's like, I mean, even remember Lita's even talking about her breakup thing, where their purpose of the breakup, when she's breaking up with Bashir, is basically to go out and have more sex and meet more people.
Have a good time!
Because that's what the Bajorans are like. Could you imagine the Bajoran explaining that to, like, Spock? Like, even trying to come out, for some reason, fathom, if Uhura wasn't a human, if she was a Bajoran, and she thinks they're breaking up with Spock, she's like, alright, well, I'll see ya, and I'm going out with Zach tomorrow. Spock could be like, he wouldn't be offended because of the logic, the emotion thing, but he would still be like, this doesn't seem to be logical to me. So it is kind of neat seeing how the Vulcans have always been that, you always assume that they have no emotions because that's how they're portrayed. But then when you read more of the stories, you watch more of them, that's what Sarek's problem is in this episode. He's got all those emotions that are overpowering everybody, even that confrontation with Picard, where Sarek is getting mad, where he's like, you're blaming me? For the outburst among your crew, and it's those emotions are kind of leaking through.
You know, with all these new Star Trek shows coming out, like if anyone from CBS is listening, got a pitch for you.
Ooh,
do a buddy cop show with a Vulcan and a Bajoran.
That would be. I would watch it.
Yeah, why not? I mean, cops don't really work in the Federation, but they'd figure some.
Well,
work
you could
around.
Do some type of maybe like Section 31.
Section 31, or
they could be part of the time. The
temporal,
what I'm talking about from the 28th century.
Or oh, yeah, the basically the time cops.
They could be those guys. Yeah. Time agents, excuse me, time agents. That's what it is.
A Vulcan and a Bajoran. I'd watch it.
Yeah.
Especially with the whole Bajoran earpiece thing. Yeah. And if a Vulcan doesn't understand it, be like, are you mocking me?
There's potential.
But yeah, I mean, I think that's pretty much the episode of Sarek. You know, it really focuses on, of course, the character and Vulcan ideology and society quite a bit.
Yeah.
So I think that's that. I mean, anything else about that one worth adding?
No, I think you summed up nicely.
Yeah. Okay.
What's challenging about this MechBuzz? These are two actually legit good episodes. Some of our MechBuzz have been mediocre episodes with like great characters.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of those cases where it's two great episodes with. Two fantastic guest appearances.
Well, you have Barkley, who this is the introduction to a guest character that at least I think the three of us grew to love, right? And then you have Sarek, which is essentially the tail end of his story.
Right.
So they're kind of opposites. But season three is a good season.
It is. That's when the show really took off. It hit its stride. And I mean, to your point, to make, you know, it's difficult to pick between these two. Derek, I guess because I'm the guest, allowed me to pick first. I told him, I was like, I'm having a tough time picking between Sarek and Hollow Pursuits. Ultimately, I went with Hollow Pursuits, but these are both, I mean,
they were the top two for me. I think I had a couple other small ones in the running. I thought about doing Deja Q because John DeLancey, of course, is very iconic every time he shows up on the show.
Absolutely.
Yesterday's Enterprise would have been a good option.
Yeah, Tasha Yar.
I thought about that one, but I was actually going to do that one for Guinan.
Oh, well, that's a great Guinan episode.
That's a better Guinan episode.
Because I feel like that episode gives more credence and explanation to her relationship with Picard than anything else on the show.
Mm-hmm. And it kind of extrapolates on her otherworldliness, kind of the mystics behind her.
Yeah.
So if I had done yesterday, that was on my short list too. It's basically those four episodes, you know, and I was trying to decide. And when you picked Hollow Pursuits, I thought that I should probably pick something that focuses more on the character like Hollow Pursuits does. It's a Barkley episode.
Sure.
Right. Sure. Whereas, you know, yesterday's Enterprise, it's really more about Picard and him dealing with these changes than it is about Guinan.
Right.
Right. And Deja Q, I just thought maybe I'd save that for when we do maybe just a best of Q in general kind of thing. So.
Top seven best Q episodes.
I think he was only in like 11 or 13 total episodes of Star Trek.
You're probably right. I was just making the joke that I feel like he's in one episode per season. So, yeah. I mean, top seven. Seasons 1 through 7.
So, Greg, what's it going to be, man?
All right. And in my custom...
Live taking the
balance. Yeah, live taking the balance. In a vote of 7 out of 13. A nice, you know, 56% margin, right?
That's usually what these come out to be.
That's what they come out to be. Yeah. I got to go with Hollow Pursuits and Barkley.
Yeah.
And here's my reason why. I think Mark Leonard's performance was superior. I think he was a little bit more of an emotional impact. I think what I liked about Barkley and Dwight Schultz, I think what I liked about him was the way he impacted the entire crew. It's because at one point I'm watching the episode and, like, Wesley's making fun of him and Riker just can't. Riker, essentially, it's the first time I have ever seen on the show where Riker almost can't stand being in the same room. He actually says that. He's like, I can't even... Or no, Geordi says it. He's like, I can't even stand being in the same room as the guy.
Yeah.
And Troy...
Riker wants to transfer.
He wants to transfer him.
You know, it just almost feels out of character.
And I like that because it's the first... It's one of the first times we've seen people... We've seen some of the characters have challenges in the past. Like, significant challenges. This is like the first time where there's like another polarizing character where they're all like, just get rid of him, transfer him, I don't like him. He's annoying. He's frustrating. I don't want to deal with him. And I like that because that's how humans react.
Yeah.
To potentially an annoyance. But Picard, the impact he has on Picard, where Picard's like, let's find a solution. Let's find a way to make it work. You have growth from Geordi. You have growth from Riker. Even Riker at the end's kind of like, maybe I was wrong. And Riker's like, maybe we got to give him a chance. And the whole balance with the holodeck stuff versus reality, and mainly because I can see myself, you know, 5-7 years ago when I was at the crisis point of confidence, I could see the holodeck becoming a huge problem for me. I really could.
Yeah.
So I got to go with the Barkley episode, but Derek almost had me. There was a couple minutes when you were talking about Picard's emotional outburst at the end. I was like, oh man, because you get Sarek's performance and Picard's performance that are just parallel.
But, I mean, I think you make a really good point, though, that Sarek, the episode, is really just about those two characters, Sarek and Picard. It really is. Like, there's other characters, of course. But the Barkley episode is about basically the whole senior staff and Barkley.
Yeah.
You know? Even Guinan shows up for a few minutes, and, you know, so... I mean, it's a phenomenal episode. So it's definitely not one I can be upset about.
These are both good ones. It was a tough call.
Well, you both mentioned, I think we talked about earlier in the episode, there's that 7 or 8 episode arc where you have, like, the Super Soldier episode and, you know, Zefram Cochran's on there. I mean, I know it's just the actor.
Yeah.
But then you get the episode where Crusher's, like, kidnapped. Mm-hmm. And you get all this stuff.
Yeah.
All these episodes that are just some of the best Star Trek episodes we've ever had on a certain episode streak. And they're not even linear stories. They're all episodic. Yeah. They're all standalone. And you have the episode of the Akamarians and the one girl that doesn't age and she's hunting down her old clan.
I forgot about that one.
There's Utah of the Clan Trelesta. Yeah. You got all these episodes in there that are just...
They have the CSI enhanced.
I have to go back and rewatch some of those.
But I think an argument could be made for season 3 being the strongest season of TNG. You know, it may not have my favorite episode, but I do think it might have the strongest overall season.
Mm-hmm.
I can completely agree with that, actually.
Yeah.
I mean, season 6 has got its moments, so does 7. I mean, that 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 are some of the best probably the best five seasons of Star Trek in a row I think we've ever had.
Six might be my all-time favorite, but yeah. I mean, because three stands out because one and two were so uneven. Like, they just had a rocky start. And, like, with the writer strike in season two, like, once they hit, they ran out of the gates running on season three, though. They were ready to rock.
And it ends with the Best of Both Worlds Part 1.
Yeah.
Which, I mean,
one of the best cliffhangers in all of television history.
It might be... I mean, I think it's probably the best Star Trek cliffhanger. Yeah. There's some good ones, right? Mm-hmm. But, you know, as a season finale...
Yeah.
You know, not like a comeback next week. Like, come back in 3 months. Yeah. See what happened, you know?
And I feel like at that time, like, Picard or Stewart's contract hadn't been renewed, so there was a lot of ambiguity about, like, what's going to happen? Like, is the show going to change? Are we going to have a new captain? And there was, like, a whole summer's worth of...
He thought he was being killed off.
Yeah.
You know, and even the guy who wrote it, I'm drawing a blank on the name, he was done. His contract was done.
Yeah.
So he's like, well, I'm just going to write this amazing cliffhanger. Yeah. Someone else will have to figure out how to fix it. And then they hired him back.
I know. Like, that's karma right there. That was a dick move. Like, you created this massive problem for someone else to solve, and then you had to solve it. And that, I mean, to be honest, that's why part two is kind of weaker. It's not the greatest resolution.
They had the kind of time to lose. But let's say this about part two. Did anybody imagine Starfleet was going to lose 39 out of 40 ships? It's like they didn't even stop.
No.
They didn't even come close to stopping the Borg.
Well, and it does create the beginnings of Deep Space Nine.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It shapes Sisko's character. So it becomes really significant, you know.
And Battle of Wolf 359.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, you've got the episode after that, which is Family, where Picard goes home and you see the thing with his brother. First Contact, of course, the movie is a direct tie-in. Like, this has significant ramifications.
There's an Enterprise episode.
Regeneration.
Yeah.
That's the episode that gives some people the idea that the show Enterprise is in a separate First Contact timeline.
Yeah.
You know what I love about that? I know we got to wrap up the episode, but thinking about First Contact, there's a little clip when the battle first begins, and you have to pay close attention to it. They're listening to, like, the battle start, and the one admiral's talking about all this. Literally, like, 5 seconds into the conversation, they're like, all right, we got to fall back to, like, Sector 35 or whatever. I'm like, literally, like, the battle just started, and, like, Starfleet's already retreating, and I was like... That was my problem with Voyager and the Borg, and it's a separate topic.
We can do a whole topic,
so we're going to end it here. But Zach wins with Hollow Pursuits, but stick around, sports fans, because we got more Star Trek and Borg discussions in the future.
We do, and we are going to put what we have been doing. If you follow at Red Shirts Pod on Twitter, we will post a poll for this a few hours after the episode goes live on Friday. Where you can vote for which one you think is the better guest appearance, and we will discuss the results of that poll on next week's episode. So you'll have about midday Friday through midday Monday, basically, to vote for which one you think. So follow Red Shirts Pod on Twitter there. Zach, thank you again for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
How can people find you?
I am on Twitter at AvengerZS. That's probably the best way to reach me.
Greg?
You can find me on Twitter at @_Bittersteel.
And I am the Star Trek Dude. We'll be back next week with a new guest. We'll be doing our Mechba Best of Picard TNG Season 3.
Dun, dun, dun.
And you'll have to tune in to find out which episodes those will be. All right, guys. Well, we'll catch you next week.
Sounds good.
Red Shirts and Runabouts is part of the Heroes Podcast Network. The show is hosted by myself, Gregory Bosco, along with Jeremy Munkin and Derek Mayer. The theme song is by Flying Killer Robots. You can find us, as well as other Heroes Podcast Network shows, at heroespodcast.com, as well as on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, Google Play, and anywhere you can use an RSS feed. Follow us on social media at Heroes Podcast on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitch. And you can also email us at contact@heroespodcast.com. Engage.